be if I tried. But you don't intend to try till the proper moment? Bless my soul, what unearthly prudence! He's a good fellow, Amy, but not the man I fancied you'd like. He is rich, a gentleman, and has delightful manners, began Amy, trying to be quite cool and dignified, but feeling a little ashamed of herself, in spite of the sincerity of her intentions. I understand. Queens of society can't get on without money, so you mean to make a good match and start in that way? Quite right and proper, as the world goes. But it sounds odd from the lips of one of your mother's girls. True, nevertheless. A short speech, but the quiet decision with which it was uttered contrasted curiously with the young speaker. Laurie felt this instinctively and laid himself down again with a sense of disappointment which he could not explain. His look and silence, as well as a certain inward self-disapproval, ruffled Amy and made her resolve to deliver her lecture without delay. "I wish you'd do me the favour to rouse yourself a little," she said sharply. "Do it for me, there's a dear girl. I could if I tried." And she looked as if she would like doing it in the most summary style. "Try, then. I give you leave," returned Laurie, who enjoyed having someone to tease after his long abstinence from his favourite pastime. "You'd be angry in 5 minutes. I'm never angry with you. It takes 2 flints to make a fire. You are as cool and soft as snow." "You don't know what I can do. Snow produces a glow and a tingle, if applied rightly. Your indifference is half affectation, and a good stirring up would prove it." "Stir away. It won't hurt me, and it may amuse you, as the big man said when his little wife beat him. Regard me in the light of a husband or a carpet, and beat till you are tired, if that sort of exercise agrees with you." Being decidedly nettled herself, and longing to see him shake off the apathy that so altered him, Amy sharpened both tongue and pencil and began. "Flo and I have got a new name for you. It's Lazy Lawrence. How do you like it?" She thought it would annoy him, but he only folded his arms under his head with an imperturbable, "That's not bad, thank you, ladies. Do you want to know what I honestly think of you? Pining to be told. Well, I despise you." If she had even said, "I hate you," in a petulant or coquettish tone, he would have laughed and rather liked it. But the grave, almost sad accent of her voice made him open his eyes and ask quickly, "Why, if you please?" "Because with every chance for being good, useful, and happy, you are faulty, lazy, and miserable." "Strong language, mademoiselle." "If you like it, I'll go on." "Pray do, it's quite interesting." "I thought you'd find it so. Selfish people always like to talk about themselves." "Am I selfish?" The question slipped out involuntarily and in a tone of surprise, for the one virtue on which he prided himself was generosity. "Yes, very selfish," continued Amy, in a calm, cool voice, twice as effective just then as an angry one. "I'll show you how, for I've studied you while we have been frolicking, and I'm not at all satisfied with you. Here you have been abroad nearly 6 months, and done nothing but waste time and money and disappoint your friends. Isn't a fellow to have any pleasure after a 4-year grind? You don't look as if you'd had much. At any rate, you are none the better for it, as far as I can see. I said when we first met that you had improved. Now I take it all back, for I don't think you half so nice as when I left you at home. You have grown abominably lazy. You like gossip and waste time on frivolous things. You are contented to be petted and admired by silly people, instead of being loved and respected by wise ones. With money, talent, position, health, and beauty. Ah, you like that, old vanity, but it's the truth, so I can't help saying it. With all these splendid things to use and enjoy, you can find nothing to do but dawdle, and instead of being the man you might and ought to be, you are only..." There she stopped, with a look that had both pain and pity in it. St. Lawrence on a gridiron, added Laurie, blandly finishing the sentence. But the lecture began to take effect, for there was a wide-awake sparkle in his eyes now, and a half-angry, half-injured expression replaced the former indifference. "I supposed you'd take it so. You men tell us we are angels, and say we can make you what we will, but the instant we honestly try to do you good, you laugh at us and won't listen, which proves how much your flattery is worth." Amy spoke bitterly, and turned her back on the exasperating martyr at her feet. In a minute a hand came down over the page, so that she could not draw, and Laurie's voice said, with a droll imitation of a penitent child, "I will be good. Oh, I will be good." But Amy did not laugh, for she was in earnest, and tapping on the outspread hand with her pencil, said soberly, "Aren't you ashamed of a hand like that? It's as soft and white as a woman's, and looks as if it never did anything but wear Jouvin's best gloves and pick flowers for ladies. You are not a dandy, thank heaven, so I'm glad to see there are no diamonds or big seal rings on it, only the little old one Joe gave you so long ago. Dear soul, I wish he was here to help me." "So do I." The hand vanished as suddenly as it came, and there was energy enough in the echo of her wish to suit even Amy. She glanced down at him with a new thought in her mind, but he was lying with his hat half over his face as if for shade, and his moustache hid his mouth. She only saw his chest rise and fall, with a long breath that might have been a sigh, and the hand that wore the ring nestled down into the grass as if to hide something too precious or too tender to be spoken of. All in a minute various hints and trifles assumed shape and significance in Amy's mind, and told her what her sister never had confided to her. She remembered that Laurie never spoke voluntarily of Joe. She recalled the shadow on his face just now, the change in his character, and the wearing of the little old ring, which was no ornament to a handsome hand. Girls are quick to read such signs and feel their eloquence. Amy had fancied that perhaps the love trouble was at the bottom of the alteration, and now she was sure of it. Her keen eyes filled, and when she spoke again it was in a voice that could be beautifully soft and kind when she chose to make it so. "I know I have no right to talk so to you, Laurie, and if you weren't the sweetest-tempered fellow in the world, you'd be very angry with me. But we are all so fond and proud of you. I couldn't bear to think they should be disappointed in you at home, as I have been, though perhaps they would understand the change better than I do." "I think they would," came from under the hat, in a grim tone, quite as touching as a broken one. "They ought to have told me, and not let me go blundering and scolding, when I should have been more kind and patient than ever. I never did like that Miss Randall, and now I hate her," said artful Amy, wishing to be sure of her facts this time. "Hang Miss Randall!" And Laurie knocked the hat off his face with a look that left no doubt of his sentiments toward that young lady. "I beg your pardon, I thought—" And there she paused diplomatically. "No, you didn't. You knew perfectly well I never cared for anyone but Joe." Laurie said that in his old, impetuous tone, and turned his face away as he spoke. "I did think so. But as they never said anything about it, and you came away, I suppose I was mistaken. And Joe wouldn't be kind to you? Why, I was sure she loved you dearly."
"She was kind, but not in the right way, and it's lucky for her she didn't love me, if I'm the good-for-nothing fellow you think me. It's her fault, though, and you may tell her so."
The hard, bitter look came back again as he said that, and it troubled Amy, for she did not know what balm to apply. "I was wrong. I didn't know. I'm very sorry I was so cross. But I can't help wishing you'd bear it better, Teddy dear. Don't, that's her name for me." And Laurie put up his hand with a quick gesture to stop the words spoken in Joe's half-kind, half-reproachful tone. "Wait till you've tried it yourself," he added in a low voice, as he pulled up the grass by the handful. "I'd take it manfully,
and be respected if I couldn't be loved," said Amy, with the decision of one who knew nothing about it.